You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a warm welcome along to the latest edition of the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have you with us ahead of another week of golfing action. Dave Kellner alongside Dave Tindall here in the William Hill studio to take you through the Hong Kong Open and the Emirates Australian Open on this edition of the pod. First of all, a warm welcome to you, Dave Tindall.
Hello Dave, golf carries on, doesn't it? Never stops.
And you're fresh from a break in Marrakesh as well.
Yeah, where I didn't think of it as a golfing kind of mecca to go to, but we know it. The European Tour holds an event there, but we, you know, I think if you think of going abroad, you think I'll go Portugal or Spain, but 3 hours 15 minutes my flight took in Africa, in 3 hours 15 minutes, and then they've got all these courses around Marrakesh, about 14 of them, all like really top quality stuff. Amazing.
And was your golf, did your golf match the quality of the courses?
Probably not, it would be fair to say, but I had my moments.
Good. Let's get stuck into this week in due course, but we've got to reflect on last week, and you won't have seen much of the golf last week, will you?
I saw a fair bit.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I saw most of the first two rounds, and then I caught bits here and there.
Tommy Fleetwood winning the race to Dubai.
Yes.
But John Rahm got his hands on the World Tour Championship. There was lots of debate in the lead up to that tournament about whether he should have been crowned Rookie of the Year on the European Tour prior to the event. It seems kind of strange that it is decided before the end of season finale, but that's the way it works. And the decision in the end was vindicated with Rahm winning last week in Dubai.
Yeah, well, I mean, what was he before that week? World number 5? I mean, how can he not be Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
Whoever had won, I can't see how it would have. But maybe it just played a little part in him thinking, well, just to prove it, I'll go and win this as well.
Yeah, and he was impressive, obviously. We know that John Rahm is an incredibly talented golfer and the world is his oyster, and he should go on and win multiple majors, I think.
Yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed I didn't look at him more, you know, closer last week, because I think the first time I remember seeing him was in the Waste Management Phoenix Open.
Yeah.
Obviously in the desert, you know, that kind of could have, we see so many desert form, even though it's desert's different part of the world, it does sort of translate across, doesn't it? So I think I'd been a bit persuaded by his slightly a flat form before that, but yeah, he was brilliant. He can win anywhere, can't he?
Shall we get stuck into this week?
Yes.
We have two tournaments we're going to focus on this podcast. The UBS Hong Kong Open is the first of those, and Justin Rose is the 9-2 market leader. Sergio Garcia 13-2. Matthew Fitzpatrick is 10-1. Tommy Fleetwood 14-1. Rafa Cabrera Bello is 16-1. Kiridek Apibanarat 22s, Hao Tong Lee 25-1, and it's 30-1 and bigger the rest. And this is a really fascinating tournament and one that the players clearly enjoy, Dave. I think some of the top players no doubt will be winding down, but they get to enjoy this golf course and the city of Hong Kong as well, which I think could be uppermost in their thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that top maybe 5 or 6 in the market is superb, isn't it? Mm. To get Rose and Garcia there, and Fleetwood, of course, to win a great stuff. And yeah, Hong Kong's a great place. I've been there once, went to the...
Have you played this course then, Dave?
No. I went to the races. I went to Happy Valley Races.
Oh, good.
Which is kind of just stuck in the middle of all the high-rises. But yeah, it's a great place. I can see why they want to go there. And some of these players at the front end of the market, I think the course really, really suits them as well.
Yeah, and you think about Fanling is the host venue for the tournament and has been for many years now. It's a ridiculously short track by modern-day standards. Measures only 6,703 yards, a par 70, but it is tricky. There are some tight doglegs on the layout, and scoring not that easy. Finding greens in regulation has been statistically key at Fanling over the years. It is tight, it is tree land, and I think the players enjoy it because it's not the sort of golf course we get to see week in, week out on the European Tour or the PGA Tour.
Exactly, it's not just a sort of bomb-em course, is it? It's one you've got to think your way around, and it is quirky, and we've seen people like Miguel Angel Jimenez have a great record there where he's just kind of shaped his shots and play some nice golf, and as I say, I think it suits some of those at the front.
Of course it suits Justin Rose because he won it in yes. In 2015 and a certain Rory McIlroy won in 2011 as well, so we've had a couple of really big name winners. You mentioned Miguel Angel Jimenez as well. He won back to back in 2012 and 2013. Should we start at the top end of the market then?
As good a place as any, yes.
Yeah, Justin Rose 9-2. Will he be feeling the effects of last week? I suppose that's what golf punters are weighing up here, because he had his third consecutive title in his grasp going into that back nine on Sunday and the race to Dubai, and he faltered, and it was a shock, I think, that he faltered.
Yeah, I think I was following it on Twitter, some of it, when I couldn't see the action, people were sort of giving up, saying, well, Rose has got this is going to be a bit of a procession, and he'd sort of looked the winner from a long way out, hadn't he? He just seemed to be doing everything. He had those two wins, I mean, China and Turkey coming in, and he just looked like he's going to run up a sequence, but he did run into trouble. But I think he'll be all right. I think he'll shake that off this week, so I'd fully expect him to be right up there, and just to kind of give it some insurance. The fact that he's won here really does make you think, well, if he's not in contention, I'll be very surprised.
And Spaniards have a good record. Sergio Garcia is next at 13-2. Again, this course looks tailor-made.
Absolutely.
For Sergio, like a Valderrama type venue which he can plot his way around, and he's playing good golf at the moment. I think he will actually rue the fact that he missed a birdie put on the 72nd hole didn't birdie the 72nd hole to get in the playoff last week. He was sneaking up that leaderboard.
Yeah, it was a funny one. I put him up on this podcast last week thinking it would sort of round off a great year for him. And I think I did it before I'd read that he'd changed equipment, and I thought, oh, can I have that back, please? Have a mulligan there. And then he started a little bit flat, didn't he? Bogey the first two holes, I think. And I thought, oh, definitely on the wrong horse this week. And then he just crept up. And I only found out later that he'd bogeyed the last. Oh, he might have got some share of fourth for me, but you know, to bogey a par five last hole, it's annoying, isn't it? So but the fact that he's done that first time out with his new Callaway clubs, it's got to bode well. And as you say, tree line, shot maker's course, this could be right up Sergio Street if he's fully attuned and he's fully up for it.
And before we get to the picks, Matthew Fitzpatrick is 10-1. He's third in the betting. Again, this is a course that's tailor-made for him, and he's kind of like the Matt Kuchar of the European Tour, albeit I think in the future we're going to see him win a lot more than Kuchar's won over the years. But he's just a cash machine, isn't he? A cash register. Just keeps on racking up top 15 after top 15 after top 15. It's about 2.5 months since he won, and all he's done is make top 15 subsequently.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. What is it? 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 of them now in a row. And last week he was defending, so that added an element of difficulty. But for that Saturday 72, he would have been right there again. There's nothing he's doing wrong. He just, everything. The only thing you'd say maybe if this was a huge course, he lacks length, but it doesn't. So everything else seems to fit the bill. And if you think Rose might be a bit flat, if you think Sergio, you know, maybe is a bit in last season mode, Fitzpatrick could sneak in here. And I mean, he's 10-1, so it's not that much of a sneak, but you could certainly take the front two on with him.
I've got one pick in the event.
I think we're into the realm of cross-Atlantic doubles or cross-whatever seas, cross-continents doubles this week. So I've probably not got an individual bet, so if you go first.
Yeah, I'm going with Marcus Fraser as my sole selection. He's been clipped in from 66-1 to 50-1. When I was doing the notes for this podcast earlier on this morning, Dave, I did have him pegged as a fantastic bet at 66-1. He has been nibbled into 50s, but it's definitely significant that he takes his place in the lineup here rather than going for the Australian Open. And I think it's a move that can provide dividends as well. He just loves this sort of golf course, Marcus Fraser. A tight tree-lined venue right up his street, and much of his best form in his career has come on tracks like this. He's made the cut on all nine of his starts at Fanling. He's had chances to win this tournament on a couple of occasions as well. And he's no back number as far as recent form is concerned. He finished fifth in the Italian Open a couple of starts ago, where he had that wonderful round on Saturday, which was this year played at the Golf Club Milano, which is a tree-lined venue as well. And you saw in that event that the leaderboard was littered with players that are not necessarily beasts from the tee, but know how to get their golf ball around the likes of David Horsey and Francesco Molinari and eventual winner Tyrrell Hatton as well. And I think Fraser represents value away from the top end of the market at 50-1, so I'm going to play him a point each way.
Yeah, to me, I have him slightly down as a first-round leader, man. So I don't know if you would want to look at him in that market as well. We've not got the tee times at the time of recording right now. This is early Tuesday afternoon. But he's someone who I'd look at that a bit more, whether he can go for four rounds against some of these.
Yeah, he can fire a low one in at any time, can't he, Marcus Fraser? But yeah, I think winning has proved his Achilles heel throughout his career, hasn't it, really?
Wasn't he leading the Olympics, I think, wasn't he? That event early on, and a few others where he's done well early. But it's certainly a bit of value at 50s, yeah?
So he's my sole selection. Go on then, give us your man that you're going to use in cross-Atlantic doubles or cross-continent doubles.
I'm going to two in each.
Okay, yeah.
So the two I'm going to go for here, we've touched on them already, Matt Fitzpatrick. I just think it's his perfect course. And maybe just as an element where Rose and Garcia will be coming down a little bit from last week.
They could be fatigued this week.
Yeah, well, I think he will kick on. This is a great chance for him. Tree lined, shortest track, can use all his skills, and you almost guarantee you're going to get a run for your money. So I'm going to put him in at 10-1 as my first cross Atlantic double. The other one I want to look at is Rafa Cabrera Bayo at 16s. Sometimes you've just got to sort of time them right, and maybe where you think Rose has had his uber peak and now he's just starting to come down a bit. I think Cabrera Bayo is moving towards another big week. He was 21st in Dubai last week after starting with a 73, so three good rounds to finish with. And you said earlier, greens in reg big this week. Well, he was second for greens in regulation last week, hit 88.9%. In the correct number, Rafa. So he's doing the things that you need to do on this Fanling course. And the next part of the puzzle, can he play it? Yes, he can. He was runner-up last year. So he's got course form. He's got some form coming in. He was fifth in China on his last trip to this part of the world a few weeks ago. So I think put it all together, I think 16s is certainly a good each-way prize for him. Runner-up last year. He was also 15th in 2011. So that constitutes two of his last three starts in the event. Definitely a course for him. And Spaniards do well there, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Down the years, which is good for Sergio as well, I guess. But I think at 16-1, you're just getting a bit more of each-way juice on the player who, I think after that Scottish Open win earlier in the year, I think maybe another one will come. I think that was big for him because it stalled, hasn't it, in terms of winning. So I think looking at the front of the market and perhaps a slight open door, I think he can go through it.
Ryder Cup was big for him, I think. That Ryder Cup performance.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought it was fantastic. And I know he might not have picked up like maximum points or anything, but I think it was a watershed moment for Rafa Cabrera Bayo playing in that Ryder Cup.
Yeah, I think you can just plot his career and it's just going up, isn't it? His little moments. He was top four in the Open, wasn't he? Mm. And top four at Sawgrass. He's just starting to pick off big events and he just needs to up his win rate, and I think this is a good chance.
Okay, a couple I want to mention just before we move on. David Lipsky, who had one fantastic round last week. This is a golf course that he likes. He finished fifth here last year and 12th in 2013, and has form that ties in with the performances in the Omega European Masters, which is one of those courses that correlates very well in Cran-sur-Sierre. So I thought that he was definitely worthy of mention. If he was a bigger price, I'd have earmarked Hao Tong Li for this week. He's only had one start, I believe, in this event, Hao Tong Li, and he missed the cut in 2015. But He is going to be making waves over the next 18 months, Hao Tongli. So thinking slightly away from the top three or four in the market, slightly lesser company, but I wanted a bigger price on Hao Tongli. He's only 25-1. And the other one, Jamie Donaldson, I quite like at 50-1. I think this is the sort of venue that suits Donaldson. He's not actually played here since 2010, but finished seventh on that occasion. And he's had a month off, so a bit of time, rest and relaxation, should come into this pretty fresh, and finish fourth on his last appearance. So those are the three away from Marcus Fraser I just wanted to touch on quickly.
Yeah, just one bigger one for me at 80-1, Angelo K. I'm going to say him, Angelo K. Just in terms of course form, if you do take the angle that it's a specialist track, well, he's got a fifth in 2013.
I think it is a specialist track
as
well.
Yeah, it's fair to say that. Yeah. Fifth in 2013, runner-up 2014, 13th 2015, so loads of good course form there. As for current form, he was runner-up in the Macau Open. It's an Asian PGA Tour event. Okay, it's not the best form, but it's still, you know, he would have left that in good heart.
A top finish, at least.
Yeah, Macau, sort of that part of the world. And he plays on a Japanese tour. Last start was the Dunlop Phoenix, that one of the better-known events in Japan. He was 27th, sort of okay. So I just think back on this track, he's someone who could sneak a place. What are we each way terms? Are
we are a fifth, one, two, three, four, five, and six.
Yeah, so he's got six places to try and nick,
80-1.
Nick a spot. He's done that twice in the last 4 years, so yeah. Decent each way, maybe.
Okay, let's move on to the Emirates Australian Open, the second of the two events this week. And a certain Jordan Spieth is at the top of the betting at 2-1. Jason Day is 5-1. Cameron Smith is 9-1 here with William Hill. Matt Jones is 20s. Jeff Ogilvie and Rod Pampling, both 28s. Jason Scrivener is 30-1, and it's 40-1 and bigger the rest. This is definitely the feature event this week, I think, with the world number two and former world number one, Messrs Spieth and Day, taking in the Australian Open. And it's an event that Spieth definitely has an affinity with. He won it last year and in 2014 when the Australian, that's the name of the golf course this week, hosted. And he went close to defending at this venue in 2015 as well, when finishing a shot behind Matt Jones at this golf course. And Spieth has been well backed in the lead up to the event as well, Dave, into 2-1 now. But he won't have his regular caddy, Michael Greller, on the bag this week. Greller's wife, Ellie, gave birth to the couple's first child on the 13th of October, and it was reported in the Australian Herald Sun that he won't be making the intercontinental trip to Sydney. So instead, Spieth will have his swing coach and an Aussie, Cameron McCormick, on the bag this week. Does that give you any pause for thought when you're thinking about backing Spieth at 2-1?
Not really, because I think if he'd never played it, maybe his normal caddy Greller would have maybe, you know, scoped it out a little bit. And because I think he's going to go back there thinking he's got a great record there, and in the past 2 years, I think anyone on his bag is going to be okay.
You don't think
him,
it's
I
a
think.
Hindrance?
Not really. I think the hindrance for me is the price, 2-1.
Yeah.
I think you could get that in running at some point. I don't think you need to be taking that. It's just too short for me. Although he's clearly the most likely winner. You know, you can get a 2-1 winner in a 3-ball down the bottom somewhere.
You know what? I agree with you. I think 2-1 doesn't scream value to me.
No.
You can have value. I mean, when Tiger Woods was winning multiple tournaments a year,
I think
he was going off 2-1, and that might have been value back then.
If Spieth had for some reason played in Dubai last week and finished third, I would be probably happy about that 2-1, but he's had a break and you're not quite sure where he's at, so not for me at that price.
As for the course itself, there was a significant redesign by Jack Nicklaus that came 7 years ago, and the change to the greens were considerable as well. Matt Jones, who won the Australian Open, as mentioned, back in 2015, he's been a member at this course for 22 years. He said the greens were unrecognisable after the modifications, but the rest of the golf course remained largely unaltered, with the sight lines off the tee almost identical to what they had been before the redesign. The course itself measures 7,228 yards, and the wind is a huge factor, as is often the case on these Australian tracks. I suppose the only real shame with this tournament is that we haven't got Adam Scott or Mark Leishman in the field. They will play the Aussie PGA next week, but they've decided to take this week off.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? I used to remember whenever an event went to Aussie, you'd get, back in them days, you'd always have Appleby and Allenby. You'd always get the big ones there. So to not have Scott, it's a bit of a shame. But yeah, it's great to have Spieth and Day, but it really does thin out, doesn't it?
Yeah,
how difficult is it?
Once you get past the first three or four in the betting, or even maybe past even the first three in the betting, Cameron Smith's elevated his game, hasn't he now?
Yeah, I mean,
not to the level of Day or Spieth, but he's a PGA Tour winner.
Yeah, and he's been backed when he was tens this morning, he's nines as I look at it now. But you can see why, because he's got some excellent current form. Cameron Smith. Rob Pampling's got some really good course form, even though some of it's quite away, but I think every time he goes there, he tends to play really well. Mm. So there's a slight alternative, but have you got a pick?
I've got one, but I want to know who you're sticking in your cross doubles first of all.
Well, I am going to stick in Matt Jones at 20s for what you've said. This is his course, he knows it well.
Yeah,
it's just trying to justify current form, but I think if you kind of look a bit deeper, last time out he was 50th at the OHL. Doesn't look anything great, but just those middle two rounds of 67 and 69 look okay to me. Just finished poorly and turned maybe like what could have been a top 20 into a 50th. But his stats were decent enough in that event. He scrambled well, which you've got to do here on these Aussie courses.
Yeah.
Obviously, he'll know it like the back of his hand. And it's just a really good tournament for him, the Australian Open. Last four starts in it, a win, a 6th and a 10th. So I think he's doing enough to... If you think maybe Spieth will take one of those places, maybe Day another one, but I think the rest is struggling to find anyone to fill them, really. And you do. The class does tend to sort of rise to the top, doesn't it, in these events. So I thought 20-1... I think with a bit more form, we could have seen him nearer a Cameron Smith price, maybe like 12s. But I think 20s is enough of juice in there.
Shall I give my selection before you complete your cross doubles?
Yeah.
I'm going with Cramer Hickok.
Yeah, I looked at him.
40-1, yes. Which would be a...
He's a form horse.
He's a form horse.
One that I'd never heard of before.
He's most famous for being Jordan Spieth's housemate, basically.
Oh, is that right?
There was a little bell dingling, but... He's a fellow Texan, with Jordan Spieth in his house in Texas. Jordan Spieth has got a $9 million mansion in Texas. And Cramer Hickok, who's a very good friend of Spieth, lives with him. Their paths probably never ever cross, given Spieth is jet-setting around the world in the tournament each and every week. But Hickok has had quite a run recently. It's difficult to equate what happens on like the Mackenzie Tour when it's coming into the Australian events. But I like the fact that he comes into this with his form figures reading from back to front, second, first, 10th, and he also played in Australia last week.
I like that, the fact that he did and came sixth. So he's arrived on different shows and kept it going.
And he started brilliantly. Maybe the pressure got to him slightly, but he started 66-66 in the New South Wales Open. And I don't think it's a surprise that Spieth has had such success in Australia, given he's a Texan and Hickok is a Texan as well, and he clearly relishes these conditions. He actually said last week, after I think his second round of 66, that he never played a whole lot of golf outside of the United States, so it was nice for him to learn how the jet lag works, because it certainly played a big factor in the first couple of days. But this reminds me of home. It's very similar to Texas. I think it's possible that the jet lag caught up with him on the weekend and that culminated in that 75 on Saturday. But I just thought, given the event is so weak away from the top two, top three in the betting, that a 40-1 for a form horse who played well in Australia last week, he was worth a gamble on Cramer Hickok at 40s.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, so he's my sole selection.
Yeah, because I'm going for cross doubles, you kind of want a safer one in there. So I'm just going to put up Jason Day. He's only 5-1, but you know, once you start doubling up, that 5-1 could be quite a handy thing to be timesing things by.
Yeah.
He's kind of played okay without doing anything great for quite a while, hasn't he?
I mean, he'll be disappointed with this season, won't he?
Yeah.
Even though he's had a number of top finishers,
I mean,
he's not won, has he?
No, you can spin it quite well. You can say, well, he's had 8 top 25s. You could certainly say, well, that's okay, isn't it? But without, I mean, there's a couple of 11ths on his last two starts. It's just needs to put four rounds together. You keep look at his break down his numbers. Keeps throwing in like a 74 last three tournaments, a 75 has cost him. In the Dell Technologies, 77 in the PGA when he was, well, I was on him then and he was going great, and then he had that mad finish.
I think he's had trouble controlling his iron distance this season, Jason.
Yes.
From the coverage that I've watched, he's when it was dialed in 18 months ago when he was had that amazing purple patch. I know his putting was sensational, but his iron play was great as well, and that's been a letdown, I think, this season.
He's just had a difficult year, hasn't he, with his mum being ill and everything. It just hasn't fallen his way. So, but I think sometimes these events, even though you'd think you'd find it easier to see the whole calendar year change, sometimes golfers seem to be able to think that season's gone, even though we're still in the same 2017. This is a new one. And I can get this thing going again. So even though he's only played it once, but that's so long ago that you could slightly dismiss it. He was tied 22nd back in 2004. But we've seen him play well in the wind at the Open, obviously.
Yeah.
Lives in Texas himself. He's won in Texas as well, Jason Day. So I'm just going to give him the benefit of the doubt on this one and see if he can boost my cross-Atlantic doubles. Because obviously, in a normal event, if he's playing at his best, him and Spieth are pretty similar in the market. So the fact that he's 5-1 on home soil, I think he'll want to put on a bit of a show. Yeah, I'm going to give him a go.
I'm not going to check whether it is the Atlantic you fly from Hong Kong to Australia.
Be the Pacific, won't it?
I'm not even going to check it. Because we've said cross-Atlantic about 15 times in this
cross-continent
podcast. Cross-continent double, definitely. So Jason Day and Matt Jones, you're two from that.
Yes.
And I don't think, I've not really got anyone else I want to mention, to be honest, away from the names we've spoken about in this event.
The only one I did look at, because we've seen his name pop up here and there, is Curtis Luck, because we saw him, he won the amateur, didn't he? So we've seen him play in the Masters and some of the big events.
Yeah.
He's 40-1 and kind of on what he's done on that level. That could be a big price, but his form isn't particularly good. But he's someone who, at his best, could make an impression.
Yeah.
I can't say Jeff Ogle is doing enough to get me involved.
Not 28-1,
no,
I don't think.
That's the problem with that.
I think he's possibly priced on name and reputation rather than form.
It does seem. Mikko Ilonen, some, you know, you're thinking...
Yeah, but I'd look at him and I just don't... He's just not playing well enough, is he, to be...
That's why he's 50s, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
But after that, you're just struggling to find anyone. Curtis Luck, just back to him. He was 16th last time out. You think, oh, and then it was the Western Australian Open where... not the best contested event, and I think he'd won that the year before, but it's something. He finished with a 66. He might have a tiny bit of momentum. So if he got into a place, it wouldn't surprise me.
Let's recap the selections then for this week. I don't suppose we've got a player you don't want to win with them being too... slightly... Not lacklustre tournaments, but we've spoken about the leading contenders, haven't we?
I suppose the only one that totally put me off on price, but I think he'll go well, is Cameron Smith.
Okay, well, Cameron Smith for you. I'll take Hao Tong Li because he will be mine in the event in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Let's recap selections then, Dave.
Yeah, so I'm cross-doubling. So from... the Hong Kong Open, I'm going for Matt Fitzpatrick and Rafa Cabrera Bello.
Yep.
And I'm cross-doubling those in the Aussie Open with Jason Day and Matt Jones.
Would you be win double only, or would you be going each way doubles?
I'm going to go win, just win. Otherwise, it starts to creep up, doesn't it, the amount of bets. So I'm just going win doubles.
I'm going to take a point each way in the Hong Kong Open, and in that event... I am going with Marcus Fraser, who's 50-1, and in the Emirates Australian Open, I'm going with Kramer Hickok at 40-1, point each way on both of them. Dave, thank you for your company.
Thank you. And we're back next week for Tiger, aren't we?
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
He's the outside. We've got the Hero World Challenge priced up here with William Hill. Obviously, we'll take you through the betting with a fine-tooth comb next week, but Tiger's the outsider.
40-1.
40-1 currently. So it'll be interesting to see how that market develops over the course of the next 7 days. Dave, again, thank you for your company.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened. Make sure you follow us both on Twitter, at Dave Tindall Golf and at D Kellner, and get your bets on for the two events this week, the UBS Hong Kong Open and the Emirates Australian Open, here with William Hill. And myself and Dave will be back next week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.